So on the white outline, point A, the moral goodness of productive work. Point one, God commands us to work. Even before there was sin in the world, God put man in the Garden of Eden to work it and to keep it. Genesis 2:15, thus demonstrating the moral goodness of productive work and its necessity for fulfilling God's purpose for us here on the earth. Paul told the Thessalonian church, with toil and labor we worked night and day. And this was to give you in ourselves an example to imitate. So they were to do what Paul did and to work. Then Paul added, if anyone is not willing to work, let him not eat, unless he's at a faculty retreat. Therefore, the Bible views work, productive work, as morally good, and even commands that Christians should work heartily for the Lord and not for man, Colossians 3:23. And the Old Testament, the book of Ecclesiastes, speaks of joy in one's work. Ecclesiastes 2:24-25, there is nothing better for a person than that he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil. This also I saw is from the hand of God. For apart from him, who can eat or who can have enjoyment? Now, after I prepared this talk, I thought I'd better check and see what Scott Ray said about work in his ethics book. Where are you, Scott? You're here, and he's moderating. So, and I loved it. In Moral Choices, page 334, work will also be a part of the world after the Lord's return. And he looks at the prophetic section, Isaiah 2:4, about beating swords into plowshares, and spears into pruning hooks, and says, if you have a plowshare and a pruning hook, looks like you're going to be working in the age to come. Very interesting. And I liked it. Scott, there was a new thought for me. So thank you. It was good. When this positive viewpoint on work, that it's morally good and we're to take delight in it, enjoy, when this positive viewpoint, that it's God's purpose for us, that he wants us to be productive workers, when this is affirmed by a society, why, then working at a regular job is seen as a rightful source of personal fulfillment and dignity. And the culture in general assumes that honorable people, at least, will strive to become diligent, faithful, cheerful workers who willingly do a bit more than what is required because they view productive work as morally good. And they really believe that God will be pleased if they strive for excellence in their work. Number two, work should be balanced with times of rest. God also built times of periodic rest into the structure of his people's lives. 6 days shall you labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work. I realize that Christians today differ over the exact way in which this command applies to believers who live under the new covenant in Christ, but I think all Christians today would agree that at least it is still wise for us to take regular times of rest from work. In doing this, we rightly imitate God himself, who saw that everything he had made was very good and then rested on the seventh day from all his work that he had done, surely on that day enjoying and taking delight in the work of his hands. Number three, workers should be able to enjoy the fruits of their labor. Just as God delighted in the results of his creative work, so he commends to us enjoying the fruits of our labor. As I mentioned again, Ecclesiastes talks about this. Everyone also to whom God has given wealth and possessions and power to enjoy them and to accept his lot and rejoice in his toil, this is the gift of God. And 1 Timothy 6:17 says, God is the one who richly provides us with everything to enjoy.
About who you were just watching, that's a fellow named Wayne Grudem. You may or may not be familiar with him. He's one of the leading theologians writing today, probably. And Wayne has his undergraduate degree from Harvard in economics. And so he's both a Harvard-trained economist and a noted theologian who's written a number of books and on a lot of different topics. If you're interested in this topic, and we're going to do several sessions this year coming off of this talk, and we'll play more parts of it, but There's a little book that you can read in an hour by him called Business for the Glory of God. I would highly recommend. It's a very, literally about an hour and a half read. And then if you happen to be interested in world poverty, he has spent years along with an economist friend of his traveling around the world to the 10 or 12 poorest places in the world, and has written a book called The Poverty of Nations, playing off of Adam Smith's The Wealth of Nations. And it's a tremendously good book about the causes of poverty in the world, and it's all written from a theological Christian background. But that's who you were listening to, and you'll be seeing more of Grudem to come. Okay, excuse me. Okay, we've got some questions in there. You've got a little card with some Bible verses on it. The three Bible verses relate to the three questions that I'm going to pose to the panel here. The first question, which if you're looking at the Colossians verses, it will be using that as the backup for this question. But that is this concept of working for the Lord and not for men. We're all familiar with that verse, but I thought it'd be interesting to have Prelo and Dave talk a little bit about their personal experiences and viewpoint about how does that work out in life? What does that mean? And when you're going about your work, how does it flesh itself out in working for the Lord and not for men? And so, Prelo, if you'd go first.
Hello? Am I on? I begged and I prayed and I spoke with Hank to get out of this. And so it proves that sometimes God's answer to your prayers is no. And it also proves the inherent evilness of men. Okay.
Gary went to Mexico.
Yeah, I wish I could. Working for the Lord and not for men, I have challenges with that. I think that I am an evangelical, and when the opportunity arises, I'll certainly talk about my faith and the reality of our faith. But I would say that more than working for the Lord and as opposed to working for men, that I'm a different guy now than before I was a Christian. And so I operate with the hardwired Judeo-Christian ethics that the Holy Spirit delivers to you. When I am working, which is not frequently enough, I wouldn't say that I'm thinking to myself, I need to make sure that this person knows that I'm a Christian and that my decisions are based on that. I know I should, but I don't. And I certainly, when the opportunity arises, will drop the fact that I'm a Christian into the conversation. But I would say that, as written, I pretty much fail at that.
Dave? Restate the question, though, given his answer. I loved his answer. I loved it. I don't want to go to the same place.
You were supposed to read the question before we got here.
I wasn't sure which one.
How does working for the Lord, not for men, work itself out in your own life and work?
I guess the story that reminds me most of this question would be right before I retired from the telecommunication industry, the buzz in the industry was that people stay and are happy and at work, and the retention's high and people are happy and have joy in work if they like their manager. That everything depended upon their manager. And so they were going through this program where they were going to try to really beef up and demand these frontline managers so that people would stay. And I happened to have a very high retention rate among my people, so I was one of the people that was interviewed on this concept. And they asked me, what was I doing that was so great? And I said, well, I wasn't sure I was doing anything great. I just happened to be blessed with having almost everyone in my department was a Christian, and I think that they were working for more, they weren't working for me. And maybe, and I was glad they weren't, because, you know, I made errors, and I made mistakes, and I, you know, I wasn't perfect. No one's perfect. And I certainly hope that their career wasn't based upon whether they liked me or whether I was a great manager or not, because there was so much more. And I think really with my group, I think they did have a higher purpose in what they were doing. And I think it wasn't because of me. I just got to enjoy the fruit of that. And I saw that joy in them. And I think maybe a lot of that was promulgated to the fact that I felt the same way. And from the time I was very young, I worked, I had my first paper out when I was 8 years old. And I've always enjoyed working, or at least, I think when I was younger, I enjoyed the fruit of working. As a kid, it was nice to have money as a paper boy. I was telling a story earlier that, you know, I used to love to mow the lawn. And I would just sit out afterwards and just admire my great work. And the joy, that there was some joy there, but that was kind of the joy of, you know, the fruit of it more than just the pure joy. And the more I thought about it, I actually did have joy in pushing the mower. And that may not make sense to some people. Certainly probably in this group it does. But there really is joy in work. And I think the Lord gave us the opportunity to have joy. And I would just say to people to seek that joy. I mean, there really can be that. And if you're struggling going to work, and you're struggling with a boss, or you're struggling with an organization, that we're so lucky as Christians that we have, that we can call on the Lord for that, and we can rise above those things and those temporal issues, because, you know, managers do come and go, and companies come and go, and luckily we have something that doesn't come and go, that is steady and firm and someone that we can count on.
Well, one of the things that I had mentioned in our discussion is I bet him a dollar that a lot of his high retention rate was because he slapped people on the back and told them how awesome they were and what a great job they were doing. And time to time, again, in studies, it's shown that Americans, given the choice between a raise and a boss that affirms their work and thanks them and congratulates them, they'll take the praise every time. And I think that perhaps that is one thing that I have become much more attuned to since becoming a Christian, is praising people, thanking them, even when they really don't do that good of a job.
One thing someone told me once that had a huge impact on the way in my firm that we managed, and it follows up on what Prelo said, that's what reminded me of it, is a guy told me one time, he said, if you will picture everybody you walk up to, and especially the people that work for you, and in your mind, picture them with a sign around their neck that says, I want to be important, and then respond appropriately to try to make them important, not just feel important, but try to make them important, give them something to do that will further that along. And that's really what you're saying, and I think what Dave was saying, that, yeah, people respond very well to that, and that's, I agree, I was much more susceptible to doing that post-Christ than pre-Christ. Yeah. Okay. The next question, if you look at the verse from Ecclesiastes, we're going to be working off of that verse, and that that is about joy that they've mentioned a little bit, but you know, the verse says that a person can do nothing better than to eat, drink, and find satisfaction in their own toil. And so the question, again, I'd like to pose to y'all is, how does one go about finding joy in work? Because all work is not pleasant. I mean, that's why they call it work, I suppose. But it's not pleasant, and it's not always fun. But how does one, I think it's, again, a reflection of working for the Lord. How does that then feed in to attempting to find joy in whatever you're doing? And how successful have you been in being able to do that? Dave, you go first this time.
I'm glad you asked me first, so I remembered the question. it isn't natural, I don't think, at all, to take joy in work. It just doesn't seem like a natural thing. I think it really is kind of a gift from God. And one you really, I think, you have to ask for. I don't think it's something that's just going to happen to you because you're a Christian or anything else, that you're just going to all of a sudden find joy in work. I think it's something that you have to believe in intellectually and believe in your heart also, and seek it. I think you really have to, it's like being positive at work. I mean, you really have to, you have to put out an effort. And I think you have to seek joy a little bit too. And especially in those things that we don't like to do. I think we all have aspects of our job that we don't like. When I was a paper boy, I didn't like collecting. I just did. I didn't mind delivering the papers, but collecting was kind of tough. And especially when people tell you to keep coming back next week, And I know it was 15 cents. I mean, wasn't that big of a deal. But so we all have those things that, but again, I think as Christians, we're very fortunate that we have an opportunity that we can look to such higher meaning in our jobs. And that we really are doing the work that He commanded us to do. And certainly, it's easy for me to easily reflect on my family. I'm doing this for my kids. I'm doing this for my wife. I'm doing this for our retirement. I'm doing this, find all these reasons to do it. But all those are, I think, pale in comparison that in your personal walk with Christ, that you do have an opportunity to give Him some pleasure, right? And what more as a Christian would we like to do is at least feel that I may have brought some pleasure in my work, and I just feel very fortunate in my life that maybe that attitude was a bit forced from time to time. There's an old saying, you kind of have to fake it till you make it sort of thing. And I think there are times when I faked it, when I really wasn't having joy and I didn't really like my boss all that much. But, you really have to just plow through that, and because not everything's going to be great every day.
When you said you have to seek joy, how do you seek joy?
I think through prayer. I think you have to ask for it. I think it's like all things in prayer. I think you have to ask for that, to conceive for that, and to say that, that's part of my birthright, to have joy in working. I mean, He did command us to work, and I suspect that He wanted us to have joy in the scriptures that you showed. And I think we have to ask for it. And if we don't have it, I think you have to seek it. And if you aren't seeking it, then don't be surprised if you find joy in what you're doing.
Prelo?
I learned something from these guys in our talk before, and that was that a lot of my responses had to do with secular people as opposed to Christians. I think that I have certainly seen lots of Christians in deplorable conditions, and many times I did see joy in them. Against all odds, it made no sense. But I also think that we as white-collar Americans tend to position things as in terms of first world problems. When you encourage someone to take joy in their work, okay, that's much easier for the people in this room than a guy in Vietnam who was converted and spends his day behind a water bowl raising just enough rice to keep his family from starving to death. And his wife, when it's time to have children, goes up on the dike, squats down, and has the baby. And that's the entire medical care. So I am very blessed. I'm a writer, and I absolutely love it. Best job in the world. Part of that's because that's a talent that God gave me. I didn't earn that. And so a lot of my life I've been able to do that, and I take great joy in it. But I don't, some of y'all may know, I took a year and worked minimum wage jobs and then ended up writing a book about it. And in the United States, you work minimum wage, it's almost, there's very little difference between working minimum wage and not working. The economics are just about the same. You take $7 an hour and multiply it by 40 hours a week and tell me how many of your bills you could cover. You couldn't even feed yourself. Big corporations now limit their minimum wage workers to 30 hours a week so that they don't have to pay them any benefits. Now, I'm certainly not here to argue the liberal versus conservative when it comes to that little economic section, but I'm very challenged by that quote, because I think it's, you know, it's much easier for us with all the career opportunities and things that Americans have and how we're able to seek our niche. You don't get to seek your niche in rural Ukraine. You're going to raise potatoes, and that's what you're going to eat all year long. So I think it's a great command for us. It's great advice for us. I think God hardwires us to work, but I think that to me, in my opinion, that's very challenging when I overlay it to people in extraordinarily difficult circumstances.
Yeah, that's great. What that makes me think that I hadn't thought, we've had some discussions about all this, but Prelow's sensitivity to that made me start thinking while he was talking that probably it's incumbent upon all of us, because we are, I mean, let's face it, everybody in this room, and I don't know everybody's circumstances, but I have traveled some, and I know that everybody in this room is better off than most of the people in the world. Does that not make it incumbent upon us to try to add joy to people's lives when we run into them? The people, service workers, people who are helping us in various ways, to realize how tough their life can be.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think that just slapping them on the back and saying God bless you goes a long way towards that. I think that poor Christians do find joy because they gravitate into a Christian community, and iron sharpens iron. But yeah, I mean, all too often our laborers we treat like laborers, and trying to bring joy into their life and thanking them, and like I say, from time to time, drop the hint that the reason you're doing that is because you are a Christian, I think is great value.
Later in this video, I don't know that we'll ever see this particular part, but Grudem talks about a young man who he's gotten to know, who is now, I've forgotten what field he's gone into, it may even be the ministry, but is doing wonderful things with his life, that in his younger years was I think had a drug problem and just had all sorts of problems and didn't finish school, was working frying French fries in a Chick-fil-A restaurant. And his manager came by one day and put his arm around him and said, "You do a wonderful job of keeping these French fries hot. You're great at this." And the man who is now, as I say, is risen to top of his profession, says that was the turning point in his life. It's the first time anybody ever told him he was good at anything. And so it made him want to be good then at something else, and he kept progressing. But he says he can pinpoint the instant in his life when things turned around from him, and it's when a Christian man put his arm around him and said, "You're really good at keeping French fries hot." So that tells you what an impact that can have. Yeah. Okay. Last question, which is very open-ended, but we wanted to give these guys a chance to really talk about it personally, and that is, Grudem mentions in this that we just watched that that work brings dignity. And I would just like for each of them, Prelow, I'll start with you this time, just to comment how they see that, you know, how have they seen that work out in their life?
I think that nothing could be truer than that. A number of the years, in the past few years, as a freelancer, I have found myself underemployed because...
Just so you know, we've got about 3 or 4 minutes.
Oh, okay. Underemployed simply because the economy and marketing and that genre that, that I live and work in is in very difficult circumstances. And I don't feel good about myself when I'm not working. Even if I'm working a job that's way below the budget that I would like to be paid, I feel better about myself. And I think that's because God hardwires that into us. And in the case of the farmer in Vietnam, he does feel dignity in his work. He may have no joy, but that work gives him dignity, and his neighbors see it, and I think that's a God thing.
Dave?
When you brought this up, it made me think of, just recently we had a man at St. Michael's who is a convict. It has a ministry to convicts and people coming out of prison. And one of the things he did mention was is that the toughest thing for these men coming out, and he also included women, but though he didn't work with any, but he mainly talked to men, was is that restoring a sense of dignity to these guys. And that the first thing was to help them find a job that they could be proud of. And that was part of the big part of kind of, you know, getting these people back into having productive lives again. And he has a tremendous program all over the state of South Carolina. He has a recidivism rate of something like, you know, 0.03%, which is, you know, normally in our society it's 65 to 75%. In fact, the warden of the prison he was in was at this meeting, which was really interesting. And that whole point was is that these guys really just needed an opportunity to be men again, you know, to take care of wives and kids and get reconnected with that. And so when you mentioned that, it just came back to mind that that he felt that was the number one thing they had to accomplish. Other than he was dealing with people who had already made professions of faith. These were all, you know, men that made a profession of faith in prison and a year or so beforehand, and that they were working with afterwards. But that they needed something to do that would make them feel like men again and make them feel it. So I think there's no doubt that there is an important part of our self-worth, a feeling of dignity that work can bring to us.
Thanks. Normally we try to take a few questions, but Hank, I think we're up against the clock here. Are we not?
No one wants to leave. I'm talking.
They may be getting paid to leave.
Anybody got a really pressing question?
We got one over here.
I think in many cases, yes.
Did y'all hear that? Oh, yeah. The word work to serve, would it change the equation?
Yes, I do. I think that there are a lot of people in difficult circumstances. If you could take them out of Burger King and put them serving the homeless, and they're getting paid the same thing, but they're dishing food to the homeless instead of Burger King, couldn't agree more. I think that's right on the mark, that especially as Christians, serving other people is another thing that's hardwired into us when the Holy Spirit shows up. So thank you. That's a great point.
I'm going to add just a little bit of a twist in perspective, and that is while they're at Burger King, if their management can convince them and show them the truth that they are serving people there. I mean, those people would be hungry, too, if somebody didn't serve them. And so that is service, that all work, if it's honest work and true work that would be pleasing to God, involves serving in some means. And if you can get your people who work for you or you yourself to grasp that it would help with this joy equation. Thank you for the question. And if you would, I would really encourage you to take this card back to your work or home, wherever, and if you haven't already, read the poem on the back, When Earth's Last Picture is Painted. It is about the very thing that Grudem mentioned, that the thought he had never had before, and that is that we'll work even in the world to come. And it's Kipling's view of that, and I think it's just a fascinating poem that not a week goes by, I think, that I don't read that poem because it says so much to me. But take it home and read it. Thank you very much. I think Hank wants to have a benediction here.
Well, let me say thank you to you three, and appreciate, Prelo, you hanging in there and not bailing out, because it's challenging. What we're going to do with these videos and these forums is I want us to begin to get a biblical view of what it is that we're doing. And also, I hope that, and you guys have touched on this, I hope that we'll begin to see that culture really matters. And the culture that we live in and the culture that we have around us has a huge impact on how we work, how we live, how we view life. And the illustration I would give you as we wrap up here today is of something that we were talking about. Don and I both grew up in rural communities, and there was a lot of cotton picking that happened there. And if you want to be around folks who are doing menial, I mean hard, hot, nasty, pay-for-nothing kind of job, cotton picking is it. And I actually, as a boy, I was fascinated and thought, what a cool thing to do, until I strapped on a sack and went out to a field to pick cotton one day. And after a day of doing that, I was cured. But those women would sing songs of praise to God while they picked cotton. And the thing that we realized as we talked about that was that there was a culture that had formed their thinking that was not a worldly way of thinking, it was a heavenly way of thinking. So what we're going to be trying to do here in these forums is to work towards helping us. This world is not going to give us a heavenly view of anything. Nothing. I mean, you go out and you go to that marsh and you look at the sunset and you get a heavenly view of something. But how often do we do that? So, but in here, we're going to try to do that. We're going to try to be using these discussions in these forums to look at some of the things that Grudem teaches and then actually hear from you guys as to, you know, how does that work out in your life? And then perhaps as they talk about that, connections will get made. So thank you for being here. And, you know, if you want to invite some folks to come in who might you think might benefit from having a nice lunch and hearing some of this stuff, then please do. As we wrap up, I've got two people who asked me to be able to make announcements.